On Monday, March 13th, Patrick Ely spoke at Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Presented by the Halifax Peace Coalition and Haiti Action Halifax, this speech was recorded by the CKDU News Collective.
My name is Heidi. I'm with the Halifax Peace Coalition. It's so great to see so many people out to talk about Haiti. I have a very brief background on Haiti and a short bio about Patrick. Then Carolyn's going to say a few words about Chan, and then we'll bring Patrick up to talk with us. As we try to build international solidarity with Haitians fighting for human rights and democracy, we need to overcome the disinformation of the mainstream media. In numerous editorials and reports, our papers and newscasts repeatedly inform us that Haiti is a failed state, that it is a country of unstable governments whose people somehow can't seem to shake the legacy of poverty and violence despite the generous economic and political support of Western democracies like the US and Canada. But the reality is very different. Since winning independence in 1804, Haiti has been subjected to vicious foreign intervention, both economic and military, by the very countries that have taken upon themselves the responsibility of restoring democracy and stability to Haiti. These countries, which include Canada, have been among the most destabilizing and anti-democratic forces. The coup d'etat that ousted the democratically elected president Jean-Bertrand Aristide in February of 2004 was executed with the help of US and Canadian forces, and Canada's very secret Joint Task Force 2, also known as JTF-2, were responsible for securing the airport while Aristide was escorted onto an American plane. The US, France, and Canada were major players in planning of the coup, and there is strong evidence to suggest that part of this planning took place at a conference in Ottawa 1 year before the coup happened in January of 2003. With Aristide in exile, the appointed interim government of Gerard Latortue has been brutally repressing the poorest Haitian neighborhoods where support for Aristide's Lavalas party is the strongest. Latortue's illegitimate government has committed numerous atrocities, including arbitrary arrests, destructive searches, and the injury and killing of civilians under the watch of, and sometimes with the direct involvement of, UN forces. In fact, Canada's role in undermining Haitian democracy, right up and including the elections, is a story that has been pretty much ignored by the mainstream Canadian media. The majority of Canadians want a foreign policy based on human rights and international law, and not one that serves the US imperial interventions. We need to speak the truth about our involvement in the recent coup and the election. And few are better qualified to speak on these matters than Patrick Ely. Patrick, a Canadian citizen, was minister in the first government of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide from 1991 to 96, where he served as the national coordinator for the fight against drug trafficking from 91 to 94, and Secretary of State for National Defense from 94 to 95. While serving in the latter post, he was instrumental in creating the Haitian National Police and disbanding the Haitian Army. He is an outspoken critic of the coup and foreign invasion that ousted Aristide and helped found SOS, a citizen watchdog group in Haiti, whose motto is, "Politics is too important to be abandoned by the politicians." His visit is part of a 5-week speaking tour across Canada organized by the Canada-Haiti Action Network, known as CHAN, and locally by Haiti Action Halifax and the Halifax Peace Coalition. So now I ask Carolyn to come up and say a few words about CHAN.
Thank you, Heidi. Just before we pass the podium over to Patrick, I wanted to say a couple of words about the two sponsoring organizations. My name is Carolyn Van Gerp, and I'm a volunteer with the Halifax Peace Coalition and with Haiti Action Halifax. And on behalf of both organizations, really want to thank you all for coming and also invite you to please join our organizations if you want to be involved in helping us organize events like this in the future. We're both fairly busy but small, congenial groups of people, and we welcome anybody to join us. The Haiti Action Halifax meets on Monday evenings at 8:30 at the One World Cafe on Agricola Street. It's a great place to meet, even if you just come to hear the music. Monday night's great night for music, and you can also help us organize events. The Halifax Peace Coalition meets on Tuesday evenings at 7 o'clock right across the street at the Computer Science Building. If you're not able or maybe not interested in coming to meetings to help organize events, but you'd like to find out about events like this that we have upcoming, there are a couple of ways you could do that. If you go to the Halifax Peace Coalition website, there are instructions for joining an events-only listserv. Maybe one or two notices a month would go out. And you can sign up for that yourself. The Haiti Action Group has the same thing, a listserv, and we send out no more than a couple of messages a month, and we would need to sign you up for that. Okay, I've been involved in international solidarity work for a couple of decades, and I have to say I have never seen or experienced something like the network that's been established in Canada on Haiti. It's been absolutely incredible. In a very short time, groups across the country have formed in large cities, small communities. Patrick has just come to us from Fredericton, where I think there were 60 people out. Yes. On a weekday. He's off to St. John's, Newfoundland tomorrow. It's one of the most well-organized networks that I've ever experienced. And I think we'll hear a little bit about why that is from Patrick, and why it's so important that Canadians do get involved and do become informed about Canada's role. And that's one of the reasons the Canada Haiti Action Network has invited Patrick to come to Canada and to speak to us here tonight and in cities across the country, because it's one more way for us to find out both what's happening in Haiti today, what Canada's role is, and what we as citizens of Canada can do. We have a march that's happening on Saturday. It starts at noon. It's going to start at the farmers market, and it's going to end up at Victoria Park, where we have quite a wonderful lineup of performers, including Michael Franti and speakers. So please come out to that noon this Saturday. Okay, I've probably taken up too much of your time, so I'm simply going to ask you to help us welcome Patrick Ali.
Thank you. I want to thank Chan for inviting me. The chapter in Halifax for hosting me, and you for being here. Caroline was mentioning the dynamism of the network of solidarity with Haiti. And she said it's been surprising, and I think the first to be surprised are the Haitians themselves. And because, as I've said many times before, solidarity with Haiti was mostly a Quebec affair, because that's where most Haitians who live in Canada reside, and also historically, Quebec had more relation with Haiti because of French being the teaching language in Haiti. So it came as a surprise, because I wonder how Haiti worked his way into the mind of Canadians, given the fact that Haiti has been so misrepresented over the years or ignored by the mainstream media, and also, I would say, by the leadership in Canada. And this misrepresentation is not new. In fact, it started really with the birth of Haiti. Some of you might be familiar with it, but it's been one of the best kept secret in history. You know, the Haitian Revolution from 1791 to 1804 was a momentous event in the history of mankind. For the first time, slaves actually proclaimed the end of slavery, then went on to defeat three armies, which were the most powerful of the time. I'm talking about the British army, the Spanish army, and the army of Napoleon. And this was also, at the same time, a revolution against colonialism and imperialism in its infancy. So it's an event that should have been known by everybody. It should be almost mandatory if you're studying world history that you should study the history of Haiti. But it is not the case. And if you look at what Hollywood, the greatest teacher, you know, for people living in North America, has treated the Haitian Revolution, there is absolutely not a single movie about the Haitian Revolution. I've seen at least two about Spartacus, but Spartacus failed. And probably that's why they have him on the big screen and they have not a single Haitian hero. Not only was the Haitian Revolution the end, proclaimed the end of slavery, or if you want, slavery as a crime, as an unnatural state, but it also started the independence of the countries in Latin America. Another fact that is not known about Haiti is that Haiti wanted to spread freedom all over the world, but more precisely in the region, and help Bolivar and Miranda twice. First by giving them safe haven, and then providing them with weapons, money, printing press, and Haitian volunteers to go and liberate South America. And that has been swept under the rug. And Haiti, of course, after its revolution, was completely isolated. The powers of the time would not commerce with her. And she was treated like a sickness that has to be quarantined. Because you have to remember that then countries like France, Britain, and of course the US practiced the slave trade or held slaves. And the US waited until 1864 to recognize Haiti. And they should have been more grateful because Jefferson was able to buy Louisiana, Jefferson or another of these early presidents, because Napoleon had to renounce his dream of an American empire after having been defeated so severely in Haiti. So the size of the US is a direct result of the Haitian Revolution. And yet they waited until 1864 to recognize Haiti. But there is even worse. Bolivar could not have liberated South America without Haitian help. And yet, when the first organization of American state was created and convened under the initiative of Bolivar, he made sure not to invite Haiti so as not to incur the wrath of the US who still was holding slaves at the moment. So you see, Haiti has really received a bad deal when it comes to making its history and its people known. And you ask yourself, as you see, and as Caroline was mentioning, or was it in the introduction, not only was Haiti misrepresented, but from the start, you know, military intervention were its lot. Military intervention by the German, by the English, and by the French. And another fact that is not known is that the French, 40 years after Haiti has had won its independence, in a war that cost the life of a third of the slave population, France sent gunships and extorted from Haiti a huge amount of money to compensate the slave owners for the loss of their slave. And it took Haiti 100 years to pay that extortion money. And it is easy to say that Haiti is actually the presently the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and hold the explanation and say implicitly is because Haitians are flawed that they are in this situation. They were helped toward that hole. But now, the important thing is that Haitians, after 200 years, and I'm referring to 1791, you know, then it was a matter of conquering freedom and independence. 200 years later, around 1991, the Haitian people decided they had another conquest to make, and it was the conquest of true democracy. And just as Napoleon had tried to stop the Haitian people in their quest for freedom and for independence, now we see the new powers and the new elites trying to stop the Haitian people in their quest of democracy. And I think it is a vain enterprise. It won't work. It didn't work then, and it's not going to work now. Because you see, there has not been a Darwinian change in the Haitian population. Those who are here are the direct descendant of those who were going rushing the French cannon and removing the cannonball from the French cannon. They're the same people. Once they are on the march, they're not going to be stopped. And if you want some example of that resolve that the Haitian people have in their march toward democracy, I'll give you a couple. In 1990, elections were scheduled, and they were to be the first free election in Haiti's history. There had been an attempt in 1987, but when the Haitians lined up to vote, the army and the death squad of Duvalier, who were still in place in the country, did a real number on them. There was a terrible massacre of the electors, and so it could have been expected that Haitians would not participate in great number in the 1990 election. And for a while before the election day, it appeared that it would be the case, that participation would be minimal and that the US could impose on the Haitian their own candidate, who had been an employee of the World Bank, Mr. Bazin, and we would have a mock democracy, you know, something that resembled democracy but would not be the real thing. But when Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who was a priest working with the poor people of Haiti, declared his candidacy about 2 months before the election, suddenly Haitian became registering for the vote. And more or less, it became clear that Aristide was going to win, and an attempt was made at terrorizing the population. The election was scheduled for December 16. On December 5, Aristide had a rally up in Pétionville, which is a city above Port-au-Prince. During the rally, somebody tossed a fragmentation grenade in the crowd. 6 people were killed, and quite a large number were maimed. The next day, Aristide decided he was going to visit some of the people who had been hurt in the general hospital. And I remember I was at the time head of his security detail. I told him not to go because I thought it would really break his spirit, and also that it might have been a ploy to make sure he was at a certain place a certain day. But he insisted on going, and I had no choice but to go with him. And as we approached the bed of a man who had lost 2 legs in the explosion, that man said to Aristide, "You know what bothers me the most? Is that in the melee that ensued after the grenade was thrown, I lost my voter's card. So could you please help me get another one before the 16th so that I can vote?" So this is the kind of resolve you're talking about. Something that cannot be stopped. And you know about the latest election, February 7th of this year. Everything was all set for a nice, clean election where the poor masses would not participate, and where, you know, somebody acceptable to the US, Canada, and France would get elected by a decent number of voters. And for that, all was really systematically set in place. First of all, by an economic repression against the electorate of Lavalas. Lavalas being that huge social movement that started around 1990 and elected Aristide, Préval, Aristide again, and now just elected Préval. So Lavalas, right after the coup, was submitted to police repression, arbitrary arrest. We're talking about, as I speak, more than 1,000 political prisoners in a little country like Haiti. But also a terrible economic repression, firing of thousands of people who had been employed in the public sector. A terrible rising of the cost of staple food. And so they thought they had broken the spirit of the people. To make sure that they could rein in these masses, they also dropped the number of voting and registration bureaus from 12,000 that they had been in the election of 2000 to 809, when in fact the population of voters had gone up by 500,000. So, of course, a lot of people could not register, and some people had to walk like 4 hours to be able to vote. So they thought they had it made. But lo and behold, Mr. Préval, just like Aristide had done the first time, declared his candidacy at the last moment. And suddenly, people started registering. And again, there was no answer ready for this demonstration of resolve by the Haitian people. Nothing was ready. And on that day also, I saw example of that resolve. You know, not only people walking miles and miles to go and vote, but people literally assaulting the voting station. I saw an old man of about 70 climb a wall and fall on the other side so that he made sure he was inside the voting station and that he would vote. And all over the country, that's the way it was. Then, when they started playing with the result, you know, using computers to force Mr. Préval's score under the 50% plus one vote that would have had him elected in the first round, the Haitian people took to the street again. This time, they voted with their feet. And this image weren't shown to you, you know, to see the discipline and the resolve of those huge crowd without violence, despite the fact that they were being literally victim of a provocation. They were being provoked. There was absolutely no violence. And in one particularly rich scene, about 10,000 people coming from the worst neighborhood of Port-au-Prince in terms of the poverty, in terms of the sheer misery where they live, they went and invested, took over the most expensive hotel in all of Haiti, and a hotel that was on a very steep hill. They went in, got everywhere in the hotel, from the ground floor to the roof, because that's where the Electoral Council had an office to publish the result of the election. So that's the reason they went there. And after occupying the whole hotel, speaking their piece, you know, saying we want the result the way we voted, we won't admit any kind of hanky-panky, they turned around and left. And not a single object was either broken or stolen in that hotel. And you're talking about people who have less than $2 a day to live. So, you see, it is foolish to think you can stop a people like this. They are at a historical moment, just as they were back in 1791. And it is more reasonable to come to terms with that reality. Whether you are a member of that Haitian elite, 5% of the population, controlling 80% of the national wealth, or whether you belong to one of these countries who think they know better than the Haitian what is good for them and want to impose a leadership upon the Haitian people, it's time to come to terms with the fact that the Haitian people will never accept to be ruled by leaders they have not themselves chosen. And there's no way the elite is going to keep 80% of the population excluded from education, from basic health care, and from the right to earn a decent living. The time they have changed, And it is better to come to terms with that. Because contrary to what has been said in the press, both about the Haitian people and about Lavalas and President Aristide, the poor people of Haiti are not violent and they are not bent on revenge, on settling scores. They are willing to have a dialogue with the minority. They are willing to come to some kind of understanding to create a more balanced society, one that is viable. They are also willing to sit down with the US and Canada and France, and they have never represented a danger for the US, Canada, and France, except maybe as a symbol of freedom and sovereignty. So it's time also for Canada, the US, France, to sit down with the elected representative of the Haitian people and see how one could live and let live. That's all the Haitian people are asking, to be able to live, and they will, of course, respect also the countries of the region. And we'll get back to Canada's role that has been evoked in the presentation. But I'd like to take a number of specific lies that have been repeated so many times about Haiti that they've become almost truth that are in concrete, you know, and that's a system that was invented, I would say, by Goebbels, or perfected by Goebbels during the Third Reich. He said, you know, you take a lie, and if you repeat it enough, it will become the truth. So I'll take a few of them and show you how none of them hold water. Every time there is an event in Haiti and there is a little synopsis of Haitian history, they tell you that this country, plagued by violence and instability, etc., etc. But truly, when you look at the history of Haiti since independence, and the history of these beacons of the world called France, Germany, England, and the US, and you compare the violence in Haitian history and the violence in the history of these countries, of course, counting the violence that these countries have brought in other countries where they send their sons to kill and be killed, you have to count that also in your history, and you see that Haiti doesn't even qualify, finish dead last when compared to this very civilized country, those who are preaching the gospel of civilization, you know. Haiti doesn't even compare in terms of violence. Look at what the Europeans have done to Europe between 1870 and 1945. And you'll see that Haiti doesn't even compare in terms of violence. But you see, Haiti is judged by different criteria. And I dare say that it is racism which allow people to claim that neck lacing is such a terrible crime. And who is saying that? Those who invented flamethrowers, napalm, the atomic bomb, and have used them on countless of human beings. And they're telling you that Haitians are savages, as if when you drop a ton of napalm from a plane, you kill less or less horribly than when you burn somebody using an old tire. And that's the type of prejudices that has been hammered into the head of young Canadians and young American and young French. Or they tell you that, and that was during the last 2 years, you know, the police had been attacking people in the poor neighborhood, and the people defended themselves. And some policemen were killed, and some of them were decapitated. And that made first page, you know. These incredible, savage, the decapitated people. Yes, but I'm sorry. When you're fighting, you fight with what you have. And it's very difficult to shoot somebody with a machete. You don't shoot with a machete, you chop people's head. And they're just as dead as when you shoot them with an Uzi or a 20 millimeter cannon. They're not more dead or less dead, you know? But this plays very well. And this makes Haitian into total alien. You can't relate to them because they chop people's head off. Yet, every week or so, you cross into the US where they gas people, you know, they have shock and awe in Iraq, where tens of thousands of Iraqis have died. They're the one who waged the Vietnam War using napalm, using Agent Orange, and they say Haiti is a disaster in terms of the ecology, without telling you how that disaster came about, how they participated in it. Yet they're the one who dropped Agent Orange on Vietnam, defoliating whole area that were probably about the size of half Haiti, in the process causing their own soldiers to develop cancer later on. So you see, that's the history of Haiti. Aristide, the worst dictator in the history of Haiti. That's what they say. They cannot come with a shred of evidence. Maybe I'm not the best person to speak about Aristide. After all, I served in his first government. But ask anybody who's honest, ask the Canadian journalist coming from this community or from Vancouver or from Montreal who were able to go to Haiti and see for themselves, they'll tell you that under Aristide, the press had never been so free. And that, on top of that, the press was misused by the elite and by very often the foreign government who were paying it. Because some of the things the press has done in Haiti in its attempt of at demonizing Aristide, if you said something like that in a radio or in a newspaper in Canada, you'd be sued, you'd be arrested. And in Haiti, Aristide not only did never move against the press, but not even suing for libel was ever attempted when they wrote that the man was drinking the blood of babies, that he was a drug trafficker, a murderer, etc., etc. You see? Then to justify the coup that they did, they say, and I heard just the other day, Ambassador Claude Boucher on CPAC saying that Aristide had been a big disappointment for the Haitian people, and that he was overthrown in a popular uprising. First of all, what government is not a disappointment? It's always like that, you know. Even the best of government, especially in a country like Haiti, is never going to be able to deliver all that the people are waiting for. especially if that government is constantly being hamstrung by the World Bank, by Washington, by Ottawa, and by Paris. But when you are unsatisfied with the government that you elected, what do you do in a democracy? And this is what the Haitian people were saying. At the end of his term, you go back to the ballot and you defeat him, or if he's not eligible, you defeat his party. George W. Bush has an approval rating of about 36%. 36%. He has lied to his people to send young Americans to kill and be killed. He has lied. He has spent $200 billion of his countrymen's money on this terrible criminal adventure. Yet, I know not of a plan to have GTF-2, maybe a Chinese commando and a British commando going anytime soon to the White House to get Mr. Bush out. And I think if that was attempted, even though the American people disapprove of Mr. Bush, they would stand against such a measure, because that's not the way democracy works. And Haitians, they want the same democracy. They want to elect their leader, and they want to defeat their leaders using the ballot. That's the way of democracy. But you hear Canadian politicians and leaders at that. You hear or you read in the mainstream press that, you know, Canada almost embarked on a humanitarian mission, you know, to rid Haiti of a president who was a disappointment. And also, you have the feeling that all of Haiti stood up against Aristide. But I was there. The so-called opposition, which was being funded to the tune of $5 million by the US and by our own CEDA, could never put more than 10,000 people out in the street. Yet, on January 1st, on the day of celebrating our bicentennial, there was at least 100,000 people in front of the National Palace. The images are there. Not only that, but the crowd pushing broke down the fences and running straight into the yard of the palace. And there was not a single incident. This is not what a leader that is hated by his people. This is not the kind of crowd he gets, and that's not the kind of reaction he has in front of a crowd invading the yard of the National Palace. But on February 7th, which marked the first time Aristide was inaugurated, it was February 7, 1991, so 2004, anyway, that was 13 years. It was the commemoration of the 13 years after the first February 7. There was a demonstration of about 500,000 people in Port-au-Prince. All these people were saying just one thing: 5 years. That's the mandate of a president, and Aristide should do his 5 years. No way he could have paid 500,000 people to take to the street. No way. He would have had them start from the belly of the city and climb all the way to the rich neighborhood up in Pétionville, which is quite a climb, and then come down and celebrate in front of the National Palace. But they tell you that Aristide had lost all his popularity. He had lost all his popularity, and yet they sent him all the way to the Central African Republic. And when he was invited by Prime Minister P.J. Patterson in Jamaica, Canada, the U.S. and France, as well as the puppet government, went berserk. He's too close. He's too close. He's going to destabilize the whole area. How would he do that if he didn't have a strong following in the country? How would he do that if all Haiti had exploded in joy seeing those Canadian soldiers, those French soldiers, on the very year of our bicentennial, by the way, and the U.S. Marines in Haiti? They should have been, you know, welcomed, and Aristide would truly have become somebody of the past. But why be afraid of him? Because he's in Jamaica. The amount of pressure that was brought to bear on Jamaica by Canada, the US, and France was incredible. All that to keep somebody who doesn't have an ounce of popularity out of the whole region. They didn't want him in the hemisphere. That's how it was, you know? So, now, I remember the poster said, Haiti at a crossroad. And truly, we are at a crossroad. And from the point of view of the Haitian people, and allow me to make this precision, whenever I say the Haitian people, I am inclusive in my definition. I don't exclude anybody. But truly, if one is true to numbers, the Haitian people are first and foremost the vast majority of Haitians, not the elite. The elite has a choice of belonging or not. But when I refer to the Haitian people, I refer to the vast majority of Haitians who happen to be poor. They're the one. I think the Haitian people have a lot of hope. They are looking to the future, and they want stability as well as democracy. They've proven it. 4 times they were allowed to go to the voting station. 4 times since 1990, December. 4 times they have voted in large numbers. 4 times they've picked someone from the same political current, Lavalas, every time. So, we would have had stability. This is the definition of stability, staying the course. The Haitian people have stayed the course. They haven't resorted to violence to impose a government. Every time, the instability has come from people who supposedly know better than us what's good for us. The same one who, after Aristide's first election, 7 months later, organized a military coup against him, cost the life of 5,000 people at the very least, completely messed up the economy of a country that was already in dire straits. Then, when the Haitian people went to the polls again and voted for Mr. Préval, who had been Aristide's first prime minister, what did happen is that intrigue at the parliament blocked all initiative of Mr. Préval. And the aid and the loans were cut, creating economic instability, not through the fault of the Haitian people. Once again, it was foreign interference with the complicity of the elite. Then the Haitian people went again and voted for Mr. Aristide in 2000. Immediately, instability resumed, but also not through the Haitian people's fault, but because the so-called opposition and in Washington, you know, they decided that they were going to squeeze out Mr. Aristide. And the instability of the last 2 years has only one origin. It was that criminal operation done in the stealth of night, in the night of the 28th to the 29th of February, and in which Canada played a crucial role. That's the source of the instability that we've seen in the last 2 years. The rise in killing, summary execution, the rise in arbitrary arrest, the rise in kidnapping, all of that can be started, can be retraced to that fateful kidnapping of an elected president. So you see, the Haitian people are ready for democracy. They've been ready for a long time. They're ready for stability. So on this account, we are hopeful. The Haitian diaspora has been contributing $1 billion a year to the Haitian economy, and it can contribute probably 10 times more if the situation is conducive to that. We are developing a solidarity with Canada, the Canadian people, but also, and this is very important, with CARICOM, our natural allies, but from which we've been kept separated for centuries by the ex-colonial master. And then there is this new wind of social justice blowing over South America, Venezuela, Chile, Bolivia. And there are new possibilities. The Haitian people will use these new possibilities, I think, and will astonish the world just like they did 200 years ago. But for that, we must be allowed to chart our own destiny. This is what international law says, that there are no small nation. There are small countries, but there are no small nation. We are sovereign, and we have the right to chart our own destiny. And that should be respected by countries, whether they are 10 times or 100 times bigger than we are. And if it is not so, you see, I think here in Canada, a lot of people, or should I say we, because I'm a Canadian citizen since 1978, we tend to think that sovereignty and democracy are a place, you know, like the promised land. Once you get there, you can sit down on your laurel and cruise. But that's not the case. Democracy and sovereignty are a process. It is a struggle. It demands constant vigilance and constant commitment. And if you don't try to learn that from the example of the Haitian people, you're going to find out that you live next to a country that has a peculiar view of the world, next to a country in which the leadership believes in manifest destiny. They believe that they're not of the world, but that the world is owned by them. And you are their neighbor. Pretty soon, they're going to start looking at your water and say you don't need that much. They're already looking at your oil in Alberta and say you don't need that much. We need it. And let's say you succeed in electing a government that is looking at the best interest of Canada and the Canadian people. Don't be surprised if one day there is a regime change here also, if you're not vigilant, if you do not develop that solidarity with Haiti, and if you do not realize that Haiti needs you, but you also need Haiti. There is a lot to be learned from what is happening in Haiti, because Haiti has been, over history, in history, both the canary in the mine, that when it dies, it signals danger for everybody in the mine, but it has also been a beacon. So there is a lot to be learned from Haiti. And we should take this solidarity that we discovered in times of trouble and keep it alive, as the Haitian people have avoided the trap that was set for them and are moving towards creating a new society. It is an extraordinary experience when a revolution is taking place. We should all be able to learn from that. So we have to keep that solidarity alive, stronger in the years that will come. Because dangers are still around. You know, I started this tour with a lot of positive vibration I wanted to send to the new government of Canada. You know, I said to myself, I don't care whether they are conservative or liberal or whatever. They have a chance to say, we are not responsible in the mess that was created in Haiti by the last government. So we can start anew, have the right policy without appearing to be atoning for our mistakes. And I thought that Mr. Harper would jump at the occasion. He would start conversation with the elected leaders of Haiti to build future cooperation. But what has he done if not invite the de facto puppet prime minister? And so has Mr. Charest, who is the premier of Quebec. So this is a very bad signal. And it calls for greater vigilance and greater proactivity on our part if we are going to preserve that victory that has cost the Haitian people so much. It doesn't seem like Mr. Harper and Mr. Charest have understood the lesson given by the Haitian people, the message sent by the Haitian people in February of 2006. And that message is a clear condemnation of the policy that has been pursued by Canada since 2003 in that famous meeting in Ottawa and implemented on February 29 and the years that have ensued. It has been a clear condemnation, not by radicals like me, but by millions of Haitians who went and voted precisely against the project that Canada, the US, and France had for us. So I will take your question now, because otherwise that monologue kind of bore me. I've heard me before, you know what I mean? So I think it will be more interesting if we go into the question phase, but I'll finish by saying that the future will be bright if we make it bright. And this is the lesson I think that the Haitian people have given us, that, you know, we are actors. We are not simple, you know, figurants. I don't want to say figurant. You know, those people who are props on that stage. We are the actors of our own destiny. It might look impossible, but we've done it before and we can do it again. Thank you.